Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian, Episode 10. What I Use, Part 1. Everyday Carry. I'm Daniel Messer. Well, hey there, and welcome to episode 10 of Cyberpunk Librarian. My name is Daniel Messer, the friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, and check this out, episode 10. Wow, who would have thought we would have gotten this far? But here we are, 10th episode. I suppose I should throw some confetti or something like that, but you know, it's radio, so throwing confetti would just make a mess in here, and you wouldn't see it, no one would enjoy it, and then I'd have to pick up the mess, and that just doesn't seem like a whole lot of fun. But hey, it's great to be back in front of the microphone. I've got nice, you know, warm coffee here to go with it. My throat's still got the congestion and stuff, so please excuse the sort of congested sound that I am probably making, any coughing and all of that. But on this episode, we're going to talk about my everyday technological carry. This is actually going to be part one of a series on the things that I use, or what I use is the actual name of the series. But this is my everyday carry. So this is the tech that I usually have with me every day, that I use every day, but also some of the apps and software that I use on, if not a daily basis, then at least an every other daily basis. So stuff that I use quite often, quite frequently. There might be some overlap with something that a technologically minded librarian might also use. And if not, maybe you pick up some new ideas, or maybe you've got something to contribute yourself. If you'd like to contribute something to the show or throw in an idea that I could cover on a future show, you can always get me via the old email method at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Or hit me up on Twitter. I am at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's like librarian, but it starts with a B. And I also give you that contact information here at the front of the show because I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be at Computers and Libraries 2014. So I will be in Washington, D.C. starting, well, I guess it's what, Sunday, April 6th? Yes, April 6th, tomorrow. Because I'm recording this a day early on Saturday. Normally I record on Sunday and release on Monday. But you know what? I'm going to record this on Saturday and I'm going to release it on Sunday because that way I can maybe get some of the word out. If you're flying into the conference as well, maybe you have something to listen to on the airplane. And in the end, it's my podcast. I can release it whenever I bloody want to. But I usually release on Monday. So this is just a day early. No big thing. Anyway, so if you happen to be at the conference, if you happen to want to hang out or talk or get together or whatever, I am certainly down for that. I am down for drinking and confabbing and talking ideas and talking tech and talking libraries and just doing whatever you might want to do. So by all means, hit me up on Twitter or the emails, whatever works for you. But let's get into the episode, shall we? Because like I said, we're going to talk about the things that I use on a daily basis. So yes, there's some tech in here, but there might be some surprises in the fact that, you know, given what I use every day and what I put on it, because it's not always the technology that you carry, it's what you do with it. You know, it's kind of like you don't really think of a chainsaw as being a sculptor's tool, but if you come from Washington State like I did and you've seen what chainsaw artists can do to a log, it's pretty impressive. So it's all in what you do with the tool. So hopefully you get some ideas. Hopefully you enjoy the episode. And if you are flying to Computers and Libraries this year, I hope to see you there. And hey, maybe you can listen to this on the plane. But for now, let's get into what I do with what I have and what I do with it on a daily basis. Started on the everyday carry, the things that I take with me every day or that I use every day, I guess we're going to have to cover the hardware first, since I run a lot of software, but you kind of need hardware to run the software on. So my primary computer is actually a late 2013 MacBook Air. Now this is the very entry-level MacBook Air, but that's really all I need for most of what I do. I'm not an intense graphic designer. I don't do a whole lot of intense video editing. I'm basically a coder and a writer with a little bit of art and stuff like that thrown in. But for the walking around town kind of thing and just having a computer with me to do the things I need to do, my MacBook Air is absolutely perfect for two reasons. Number one, it's the 11-inch model, so it's nice and small. It fits pretty much anything I need to put it in. And number two, it is incredibly light. As a matter of fact, after I got my MacBook Air, I stopped using tablets almost altogether. Now, I still do use a tablet, and I'll get to that in a second, but it's mostly for e-reading and content consumption. It's not for any sort of writing or creation or anything like that. So that's my primary computer. Now, the computer that I do any heavy lifting on is a Mac Mini, also roughly mid-2013 as well. My Mac Mini has very similar specs to the MacBook Air, but it's got more plugs, of course. It's a desktop computer. And this is the thing that I use for all my real audio and visual work. So if I'm drawing, if I'm editing video, if I am, you know, making a podcast or editing audio, things like that, it's going to be on the Mac Mini. That's what I'm recording this on right now. So those are the two things that I use most of the time. And obviously, I don't carry the Mac Mini with me. I carry the MacBook Air. But the Mac Mini gets used on pretty much a daily basis for any heavy lifting type creation that I want to do. Now, I also do carry a tablet, a Samsung Galaxy Note. A Samsung Galaxy Tab 7-inch model. Now, that is my e-reader. That is what I read almost everything on. I do occasionally have a book with me, but I also typically have anywhere from 100 to 200 books with me, and they're stored neatly on the Galaxy Tab 2. So really, that's all I use it for. It is an e-reader. It is a YouTube machine. I listen to music on it occasionally, but I don't use it for writing like I used to, and I don't use the iPad for writing like I used to. As a matter of fact, the iPad that my work issued to me is currently at my work. I don't even carry it that much. I carry it when I'm working, because if I make a change to a website or something like that, I do like to check it in Safari for iOS. But other than that, I don't really use the iPad that much. I also use a Samsung Galaxy Note 3 for my phone. So as you can see, I'm basically dual Mac and Android for the most part. However, my job did issue me a lovely Dell Latitude laptop computer. I have it sitting next to me here. Great computer, very solid, also very heavy. So if I carry it, I carry it in its own bag and all of that stuff. But that's a great computer. It's running Windows 7 and dual booted with Elementary OS, which is a flavor of Linux. But good stuff there. So that's pretty much the tech that I use every day. I use a MacBook Air, I use a Mac Mini, I use the Dell Latitude for work, and the Galaxy Tab is my go-to for reading and content consumption, and I use a Galaxy Note 3 for my smartphone. So that's the hardware. I mean, there's nothing real special about that. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there using very similar setups with some slight differences. I'm sure there are people who are diehard Apple fans using Apple stuff, and then there are people out there who absolutely loathe Apple and wouldn't touch it, and they're using Android or Microsoft stuff. Whatever, you use what works for you, but I do stress, and I always will stress, that cross-platform functionality is the best way to do things. So you will find in my software and apps that I use on a daily basis, cross-platform compatibility and cross-platform usage are sort of a theme that runs throughout them. Because in the end, you can see that I use everything. I've got Macs, I've got Windows, I use Linux, I have an Android phone, and all of that. So if I use something on one device and I cannot pick it up on another device, that's not very useful to me. So a lot of the stuff that I use is cross-platform in nature. So let's get into that, and I'll talk just a little bit about different things that I use, why I use them, and why they might be useful for you. So people often ask me, what is your operating system of choice? You know, what would you use on the most regular basis? What is your favorite operating system? And I kind of give them this silly, sly smile, and I say, Firefox. Because as a web guy, Firefox pretty much works everywhere, and almost all of the stuff I do on a computer can be handled in a web browser. What is my email? It's Gmail. How do I check Gmail? Usually through the web browser. How do I access my time card at work? Through a web browser. How do I access my work email most of the time? Through a web browser. How do I access documents and things like that that I want to edit on the fly or take with me and have synced up to the cloud? Through a web browser. So it's not so much a joke when I say, you know, that my operating system of choice is Firefox. It could be that my operating system of choice is actually just the World Wide Web, but Firefox is my go-to browser. I use it on everything, and that's the other thing about Firefox is it's totally cross-platform. I have it installed on my Windows machines. I have it installed on my Linux machines. I have it installed on my Macs. So I use Firefox everywhere. One thing I would like to bring up, if you're using a 64-bit Windows installation, like, you know, 64-bit Windows 7 or Windows 8 or 8.1 or whatever, do yourself a favor and check out the WaterFox project. You know, just like Firefox, but it's WaterFox. And the great thing about WaterFox is it is a 64-bit version of Firefox optimized for the 64-bit space. So it takes advantage of your RAM, it takes better advantage of your processor. In other words, it's fast. The only complaint I've ever had about Firefox and WaterFox, because it's very much the same code base, is they're a little slow to start, but once they start, they're good. So, you know, okay, it takes two or three extra seconds for Firefox to start over Chrome, but I just get so much more mileage and so much better value out of Firefox that I switched to Chrome for quite a while, and when I came back, it was like coming home. So operating system of choice, Firefox. And also, that's what I use on my phones as well. There's Firefox for Android. So check that out. Now then, if I live on the web, and I do, I kind of have a summer home in Evernote. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of Evernote, but if you haven't, Evernote is just your sort of a basic note-taking application. But also very cross-platform, and oh, guess what? Yes, you can access it in a browser. However, most of the time, I typically use the Evernote client. There isn't one for Linux, and this is a glaring hole in their operating system strategy, because it's not like people who use Linux haven't been clamoring for a native Evernote client. So if I am in Linux, there are a couple of options, but I've never been all that impressed with them. So if I'm in Linux and I need Evernote, I just use the web interface. It's very good. It works very well. It's not quite got the full functionality you get from the standalone Evernote client, but it's there. It does everything you need it to do, so I can't complain too loudly. Now, Evernote is basically my commonplace book. If I want to remember something for a decent amount of time, maybe even an indefinite amount of time, yeah, Evernote. It goes in Evernote. I copy and paste it into Evernote. I can send it by email to Evernote. I can use a web clipper in a web browser like Firefox and just clip it into Evernote. And then I tag it. I mark it up. I do whatever I need to do. All of my show notes for Cyberpunk Librarian, done in Evernote. I'm looking at it right now on my Mac Mini. So Evernote is my commonplace book, and anything that I need to kind of keep in mind or just make a note for the future, like future projects, future ideas, things like that, they may never come to fruition, but at least they're there. And, you know, it's cross-platform. I can pick it up on my phone, on the Galaxy Tab. I can get it on any computer. So, yeah. Now, Microsoft just recently released OneNote as a free thing for pretty much everyone, and I've used OneNote. I really do like OneNote, but OneNote has this odd thing that I run into every so often with software where it just does too much. And OneNote is great, and I've actually used OneNote and Evernote sort of interchangeably at times because I need more functionality for a project. But after that project's done, I typically just go back to Evernote because most of the time, all I need are text and pictures. That's it. I don't need a whole lot of diagramming. I don't need to make sketches on my screen. I just need text and pictures. And Evernote handles that lovely. So moving on, basic text editor. Doesn't matter what the platform. Almost everything I do before it goes into Evernote or up to a cloud or anything like that, any writing, any note-taking, whatever, typically happens in a basic text editor. So on Windows, Notepad. On the Mac, TextEdit. On Linux, I use whatever. There's a bunch of them out there. If I'm using KDE, I use Kate. If I'm using a GNOME environment, I use gedit. And I can't, for the life of me, Scratch, that's it. I couldn't remember what the text editor on Elementary OS was named. I believe it's named Scratch. It's just a text editor. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't do bolding. It doesn't do underlining. It doesn't do italics. Well, I guess some of them do. I believe like gedit and Kate will. But I don't use them for that. I just write text, basic, run-of-the-mill text. I don't need to format things, especially if I'm just taking notes. I have a system I use for taking notes digitally. Works really well. And if I need to save that, copy and paste it in Evernote. Simple as that. So a basic text editor will get me through almost anything. I start all of my writing projects in basic text editors. I do not start in a word processor because I just want to write. I'm very sort of stream of consciousness when I write. Get it out, and get it down on digital paper. And we can edit later. Editing is something that happens after the writing. So keep that in mind. And a basic text editor is always there. It's, you know, it's as simple and as elegant as Post-it notes or a spiral notebook. By the way, I do carry a spiral notebook all the time, but that's another thing. So basic text editor, doesn't matter what the platform, I use one every day. I usually have one open as I'm working, even if it's not doing anything. I can just quickly Alt-Tab over to it and start taking notes. It's there for me. Now then, if I do happen to need a word processor or a fully functioning word processor or spreadsheeting or all of that happy crap, LibreOffice, oddly enough, is my go-to thing. Now, I'm not advocating against Microsoft Office, and goodness knows I use Microsoft Office a lot. But in my day-to-day sort of life and work and whatever, I use LibreOffice because it works everywhere. I don't believe they have a phone version, but, you know, that's fine. I'm not going to do a whole lot of word processing on my phone or tablet. Anyway, go back to the beginning there where I said after I started carrying my MacBook Air, I stopped using a tablet. Yeah. So one of the first things I installed on my MacBook Air was LibreOffice. Now, it may seem strange, but as I go on, you know, I understand that the Mac and OS X is a closed system. It's not an open source environment. And you know what? I'm okay with that, just as I'm okay with working with Windows, which is also not an open source environment. As much as I love Linux, Linux is not always the tool I need to do my job. So I do like OS X, but even though it's a closed environment, I install scads of open source stuff on it all the time. One of the reasons is because I support open source projects and I think they're very good. The other reason is because my LibreOffice on my Mac looks exactly like the LibreOffice on my Linux laptop or the LibreOffice on my Windows laptop or whatever. So LibreOffice, once again, cross-platform, works everywhere and does what I need when it comes to Office stuff, mostly word processing and spreadsheets. I've done presentations with LibreOffice. It's okay, it works fine, but meh, I don't like slideshows and presentations anyway. So, okay, LibreOffice is great for the writing, but for the image editing and image manipulation, I use an image manipulation program, and specifically I use the GNOME image manipulation program, better known as GIMP. Now, at work, I have access to Photoshop, and I will typically use Photoshop because it's sort of a quote-unquote industry standard. However, on my MacBook, on my Linux boot on the laptop, even here on my Mac Mini, GIMP. Most everything that I need is in GIMP. I will use Photoshop for art, but I'm even starting to phase out of that because I'm starting to find better programs. Photoshop, if you're a digital illustrator, will work. It does fine. But that's really not quite what it's for. So in the end, I can do pretty much anything in Photoshop that I can in GIMP. So it's very, very easy to cross-train yourself on both of them. The biggest problem I run into is shortcut keys, because what is a shortcut key in GIMP is not a shortcut key in Photoshop. So therein can be a problem. However, the funny thing is because GIMP is an open source thing, you can get plugins for it that will remap the shortcut keys to match Photoshop almost exactly. I'm just too lazy to do that. So that's the only reason I haven't. But day to day, if I just need a quick image manipulation thing, I just need to maybe crop an image or take something out or just make a quick change to it, I use GIMP. It works everywhere. So moving on, video. I defy you to find a better video player than VLC. And VLC, once again, open source, cross-platform. You can install it on everything, and I have. There is an Android version too. VLC is a video player that plays almost everything you throw at it. If I cannot open it in anything else, I know I can open it in VLC. And it just gets to the point that if I know I can open it in VLC, then I'll just open it in VLC. That's all I use. So soon after getting the Mac Mini, soon after getting the MacBook Air, I installed VLC on it and I made the default player for everything except MP4, because I do like QuickTime for MP4. But beyond that, I mean, if you're using a Linux box or you're using Windows or whatever, VLC will handle MP4 just as good as anything else. So VLC, once again, it's free, open source, and of course I'll have links to all of this stuff in the show notes. So don't worry about taking down notes or making a list. Just go to the website. I'll talk about that later. So VLC for video and just watching video, but for audio editing, I use two things. One is not open source, one is, and I use them almost interchangeably. Since I record podcasts on the Mac, I use GarageBand because it's there, it's free. Well, it's free as in it comes with the Mac. And it's really very good. It has some filters that I like for recording audio, especially. My office is not always the quietest place. There are things going on outside my window. I live in Arizona. It is not unusual for the ceiling fan to be going. And there is a setup in GarageBand for recorded audio called Male Narrator Noisy, I believe is what it's called. And the great thing about that is it's automatically filtering sort of out, you know, filtering out sort of the background noise as I talk, and it just makes for a cleaner sounding podcast. The biggest reason I use GarageBand is because it does that automatically. Audacity has a noise removal filter in it, which does the same exact thing, but it's an extra step. And if I can skip the extra step, I will. I go back to that part where I said I'm kind of lazy. So I use GarageBand to record podcasts. For everything else, it's Audacity. I really do not edit audio in GarageBand. I construct audio in GarageBand. If I need to edit audio, if I need to trim audio, if I need to just get a piece of a song or a clip or something like that, it's always Audacity. I'm sure I can do all of that in GarageBand, but I really don't know how. That's not what I use GarageBand for. GarageBand is specifically used for creation, not for editing. Well, editing in the fact that I will mix down a podcast and a song or something like that. But for day-to-day video, or not, I'm sorry, not video, for day-to-day audio editing, it's Audacity. And Audacity is free and open source, works on everything. I've got it installed on everything I use because I do a fair amount of audio editing. So if I can turn to any computer and bring it up, that's always good for me. So this next one is a Mac-only solution. But since I use a MacBook Air as my primary computer, it comes in handy all the time. However, before we write this off as being the Mac-only solution, there are solutions like this for every operating system you come across. And what I'm talking about right now is a program called ATEXT Text Expander. Now, text expansion sounds kind of dumb when you first hear about it. When someone tells you, hey, instead of typing all of this stuff out, I type this little keyword and it just writes the rest for me. Or it replaces that keyword and puts in something that matches that keyword. If someone explains that to you at first, it might sound kind of like a lame idea. Like, okay, well, how is that going to come in handy? Well, let me give you a couple of examples as to how a text expander can come in handy. The first one that I use all the time is with email signatures. Given what I'm doing, or given who I'm sending something to, or what mail program I'm using, or if I'm in mail.app, which I occasionally use, or the Outlook web app for my work, or Gmail, or whatever, I've got three or four email signatures that I have to kind of manage. I've got my Cyberpunk Librarian email signature, which is not my personal email signature, which is certainly not my work email signature. So rather than having something about where I guess I could copy and paste it, or in some cases I can save that as an option or whatever, rather than doing all of that, I just set ATEXT Text Expander to put in my signature when I type a keyword. And the keyword is usually something that will never, or at least rarely, appear in a word. So if I want to put in my regular default signature, I type defsig, D-E-F-S-I-G, and that's it. It sees that, it knows what that is, and it replaces that with my default signature. So at the end of an email, I say, thank you, Dan, new line, defsig. There it is. And that is great. But you can use text expanders for so many other things. I don't do form mail at all. I don't get enough email to warrant doing form mail. So if you email me, I will respond directly. But for things like form mail, especially if you've got maybe a campaign running or something like that for, a sort of Kickstarter or Patreon or something like that, where you're just going to be sending kind of the same response to certain people, you could easily set up the entire response. And then, you get that email, you look at it. Oh, that's just going to need response A. So you open up, you hit reply and you type maybe RESPA or something like that. Or RESP capital A. And it pops it in. Pops in the entire thing with your signature and everything. Beyond that, text expanders can usually be automated to a point where not only is it going to replace text, but it will basically emulate keyboard commands. So if you want to automate filling in a form, you can do that. One of the podcasts I listened to, I believe I talked about it last week, or not last week, but in the last episode, is a podcast called Hello Internet, and that's done by CGP Gray and Brady Heron. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. It's absolutely amazing. But CGP Gray talks about how when he's doing YouTube videos, there are forms that he has to fill out on YouTube to maybe challenge a copyright notice or things like that, because YouTube is stupid when it comes to copyright notices. And he's automated the whole process. He simply brings up the form, he puts in a keyword, and it fills out the form. Done. You can do things like that with a text expander. So I use ATEXT for a couple reasons. Number one, it does exactly what I want, and that's important. And number two is the price. People who use Macs and OS X have undoubtedly heard of Smile Software, and Smile Software has a text expander program. And I'm sure it's lovely. I'm sure it works really well and does all of the things that you might need it to do. But there's an issue with the Smile Software text expander in that it costs something like $35 or something like that for a text expansion program. That seemed a bit excessive to me. I mean, I will pay $35. I have $35 right now. I will probably make $35 again fairly soon. But $35 for a simple little program like that seemed a bit much. So I'm not cheap, but I do want to make sure I get some value for my money. So I just did some, you know, 5-10 minutes of research and did some looking around. Hey, is there another text expander out there for maybe less money that does exactly what I need it to do? Oh, there's this thing called Atext, and people seem to like it. And let me take a look into it. Oh, yes, this does everything I need it to do. Oh, and it's $5 or something like that? Well, I certainly do have $5. And I bought that, and I've never looked back. I'm sure the other text expander program is great, but Atext does what I do, does what I want it to do, and it does it for a fraction of the price. So that's software and apps for the most part. However, there are a few sort of bonus things that I use on a daily basis. They're not really production related. They're not one of those things where, you know, this is what I use to get things done kind of thing. They're the things I use to help me get the things done. And most of the time, they're the things I use to keep my sanity while I get the things done. And the first one that I'd like to just bring up, it's not open source, but goodness knows it's cross-platform because you can install Spotify almost anywhere. And yes, Spotify works in my operating system of choice, Firefox. There is a Spotify web player. I got a premium subscription to Spotify maybe 8 months ago. I don't believe it's been a year because I was using the free version and making playlists and finding out that probably 90% of the things I wanted to listen to were on Spotify, and I could just call them up with a search or a wave of my hand, or it would basically come up in a, if you liked so-and-so, you probably like so-and-so too, and why, yes, I do like them, and I'll play some of them as well. So I just went ahead and bought the premium subscription, and I've enjoyed it ever since. So I put Spotify on everything. I've got Spotify on my phone, on my tablet, I've got it on all the computers, whatever. No matter what I'm doing, I like to listen to music. It doesn't matter what music most of the time. I know that a life hacker will typically ask in their How I Work series, what do you listen to? And some people prefer to work in absolute silence. And I know that some of the librarians in the audience probably enjoy that as well. Me, I want some music. And I don't need death metal or speed metal or anything like that. I usually want something that's fairly bouncy, that has a decent tempo. And I don't care if it has words or not. Words are fine. Lyrics are okay with me. And that's about it. So I will listen to anything from Irish folk music on up to bubblegum pop. Or, you know, depending on what I'm doing, especially if I'm coding, I do need something that's more down tempo. So if I'm coding or trying to design a website of some kind for my library, I've got on down tempo music like Undane or Artemis or things like that. So yeah, down tempo, bubblegum pop, indie rock, whatever. It's all on Spotify. And that's what I use pretty much everywhere. I will listen to Spotify while I run. So yeah, Spotify is sort of my go-to music app. However, I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I mean a lot. If I'm not listening to music, I'm probably listening to a podcast. And it's actually more likely that I'm listening to a podcast than I am music. So my go-to podcasting app for Android, since I do carry an Android phone, is Pocket Casts. Now, if you have an Android device, you should go check this out. Pocket Casts is a paid app, but you definitely get your money's worth. It's a well-made app. It's easy to use. You can add podcasts by searching, by network. You can just pop in the URL, whatever you want to do. Pocket Casts manages and pulls down the new podcast and does anything that you would want a podcasting application to do. If you're on iOS, I used Downcast for years. And Downcast is very much Pocket Casts for iOS in some ways. It works a little differently because you're looking at iOS versus Android. But if you're on iOS, use Downcast. If you're using Android, use Pocket Casts. Finally, for an audio program, I listen to not only podcasts and Spotify, but I also love internet radio. I love listening to radio streams from all over the world. And I have really bizarre, odd tastes in music anyway. So sometimes I want to listen to Japanese pop music, or sometimes I want to see what's going on an African radio station, or what's the music like in Poland, or whatever. With a few Google searches, I can get that. And if I want to listen to it on the go, or if I just want to have it on my phone, I use an app called, and I hope I'm pronouncing this properly, XIA Live Pro, and that's XIIALIVE Pro, XIA Live. Now, XIA Live is just basically an audio streamer, so you can feed it audio streams from all over the net, and it plays them on your phone. Pretty simple. But you can also do searches, so if you have a favorite station, you know, by name, you can try searching for that. You can just add the URL directly. Whatever works for you. You can also do genre searching. So if you want to hear some electronic music or you want to hear some 80s music, you can just do a quick search and it will find stations that will play that music for you and just pull it right in. I went ahead and bought the pro version, mostly because I started feeling guilty for using the free version for, probably 3 or 4 years. Yeah, probably be about 3 or 4 years because I found XIA Live soon after I got my first Android phone. Yeah, so I felt like, you know, I've used this long enough. I should probably pay the developer for it. The pro version gives you a couple little spiffs that I don't use anyway. I bought it simply to support the developer. It's great software, and if you're into audio streaming on the internet at all, check out XIA Live. And finally, to kind of wrap things up with a couple of sort of productivity apps, but not really, I use a alarm clock replacement on Android called Timely. Timely is an absolutely beautiful alarm clock app. I hate the standard alarm clock sound, you know, the or anything like that. I don't like being woke up with something obnoxious. It's just going to piss me off. And you know, no one wants to start their day like that, I don't think. Maybe you do. Maybe you do want to start your day pissed off. If you do, there are plenty of clock radios in, you know, the stores that are available for that purpose. Me, if I'm going to have to wake up at a given time, I want to wake up somewhat peacefully. I don't want to be, you know, thrown out of bed. Timely does exactly that. It's got several alarms, and most all of them are very sort of soothing, easy wake-up things. I'm not a very deep sleeper. I do sleep fairly lightly, so that works for me. Now, if you're one of those people that basically needs a bucket of water over your head to get out of bed, Timely may not be the app for you because it does focus on waking you up gently. But there's a couple of alarms in Timely that I use on a regular basis. They're very easy to listen to. They do wake me up because if nothing else, they're a foreign noise in my room. And I get up feeling okay. I mean, I'm not trying to scramble for the alarm to shut it off or slapping the snooze button so hard that I actually pop the snooze button into the radio or anything like that, which I've done a couple times. Timely wakes me up and I pick up my phone and I turn it off. That's it. And then I'm out of bed. Great. And finally, any.do. Now, I call it AnyDo myself, but I think everybody else calls it Any.do. That's ANY.do. Any.do is just basically a list-making application. And the reason I use that on my Android phone, and it is cross-platform compatible, you can use it on an iOS device too. But the reason I use it on my Android phone is just to keep track of little things that I need to keep track of. Usually it's something that is important enough that I don't want to forget it, but I don't really need to put it on my calendar. I use, you know, my calendar as things that have firm deadlines. I have to do this by the 3rd. I have to do this by the 7th. On the 8th, I have a meeting. Things like that. That's what my calendar for. AnyDo is for things like, hey, I need to remember to finish that one web page. It's not got a deadline. I just need to finish it. Or I need to update the on-order items on the website. It's not really got a deadline per se, because that can be done on a different day, but it is something that I need to do. So any.do is basically there to remind me to get a certain thing done when it doesn't have a firm deadline. because I don't like having a whole bunch of stuff on my plate for things to do. I'm busy enough as is. So I just don't want to forget it, and I don't want to get lost in a shuffle of things that I do need to do that do have firm deadlines. And for that, any.do is pretty good. It will also, you can also set reminders with any.do. So just like a calendar app, it will, you know, if you say, I need to be reminded of this on Thursday at 5, it will do so. And it's great. So any.do is sort of my free form getting things done list, but it's very free form. Sometimes I have 5 or 6 things on there. Sometimes I have nothing on there. So it's there when I need it, whenever I need it. And that's just a quick basic rundown of some of the stuff that I use on a daily basis. I mean, there's more apps out there that you can use that actually compete or replace some of these apps I've talked about. Goodness knows there's more than one list-making app out there, and there's more than one podcasting app out there that you can listen to podcasts on. And if you don't like Spotify, there's Ardio. And if you don't like Ardio, there's Rhapsody. And if you don't like that, there's something else. But this is the stuff I use on a very regular basis, if not a daily basis, to do my job, to do projects that I'm interested in, and to just do things. Because given who and what I am, I typically do live my life around some kind of technological solution. And these are the solutions that, after 37 years of being on the planet, have always worked out pretty well for me. That about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe got some ideas for some technological things you might give a try, or just see if it might work for you. Now, if you have a technological solution that you cannot live your daily life without, let me know, and I can certainly throw it in the show notes as ideas for other people to check out on their own. You can always reach me at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Or hit me up on Twitter at Vibrarian, that's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N, it's like librarian, but with a B. The music you're currently hearing is A Flashback for Mr. Computer by Kevin Bryce, and you can pick that up along with a whole lot of other music at the Free Music Archive, that is freemusicarchive.org. And they've got all kinds of great stuff, from down-tempo to jazz to classical and so much more. If you need a tune for a project or a podcast or things like that, it's definitely a place worth checking out. The Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. And I'll, of course, have a link to this song in the show notes. The opening track, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita. And that also comes from the Free Music Archive. Links to that in the show notes. Speaking of show notes, you can find pretty much everything I talked about in the show notes, which you can pick up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And I'll have links to all of the goodies and apps and things like that that I talked about in this episode. So if you want to go try something out, you can pretty much go grab it from there. I'll just have links to some of the project pages for things that are very cross-platform. For instance, VLC is available pretty much anywhere you want to go find it. So for things like that, if you think it might be something you want to put on your Android or iOS device, hit up your app store and see if it's there. But I'll at least link to the project pages for those things. Like I said, I'm going to be at Computers and Libraries 2014, so if you happen to be in Washington, D.C. from, say, April 7th to, what, the 10th or so? Yeah, April 7th through 10th. You can hit me up there if you'd like. I will be around someplace, and I will be attending different conferences and sessions and all of that good stuff. So if you want to contact me, feel free. I will be around. But meanwhile, that's it for this episode. I thank you for tuning in, and just want to remind you, you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care, and I'll see you next time.